From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Sasha Pfeiffer in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. What used to be known as vocational education is making a big comeback in U.S. high schools nationwide. But it's not just auto repair or wood shop anymore. And it has a new name. Today, it's career and technical education, with courses that aim to get teenagers ready for work right after they graduate in fields like healthcare, public safety, business management, and more. This hour on Point, modern voc ed in high schools today and how it promises to be different than it was in the past. Please join us on air or online. Did you take vocational classes? Does your child take career classes in high school now? What do you see as their value? And do you think that voc ed can be an alternative to college? Do you think voc ed has a stigma that needs to be erased? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Facebook and Twitter at onpointradio. Joining me now from Washington is Emily Durie. She's a senior associate editor at The Atlantic, where she covers education. Emily has traveled to report on career and technical education programs being offered nationwide. Some of her recent reports include how Houston is redefining learning to prepare its future workers, the Colorado paradox, and Reno is gambling it all on tech. You can find her links to her reporting at our website, onpointradio.org. Emily Durie, welcome to On Point.
Thank you.
So, Emily, has the term vocational education sort of been banned from the lexicon? Is that really not what its proponents want it to be called anymore?
It really has. They're going for career and technical education. And part of that is because a lot of these classes involve computer science and computer skills, and they really want to get away from that idea that these are kids in wood shop or home ec.
And is it really more than a new name? Has it expanded beyond what many people think of when they think about cosmetology and learning to cut hair and apply makeup and fix cars?
It really has. So those classes still exist. There are still cosmetology classes in most of these high schools, and there are auto repair classes. But some of the auto repair classes, for instance, have been reworked into auto tech or auto mechanics. And so these kids are doing some of the repairs using computers and advanced math. But if you look beyond that, especially in places like Houston, there are petrochemical classes, there are advanced manufacturing classes. And in a lot of places, it completely depends on what the local economy needs. But the courses have really broadened in scope.
That's interesting. Do you find that in places that are sort of heavier with industry, like, say, Houston, you're more likely to see these kind of offerings in high schools?
Yes, absolutely. And I think there is more of an incentive for local industry to collaborate with high schools and even community colleges and to really say to kids, here's a clear pathway to a career. And often these industries, these businesses will pay for community college degrees once these kids graduate from high school or even hire them right away. In some place like Reno or like Denver, where there's less oil industry, say, or fewer healthcare jobs, there's a bit more of a disconnect, and there's not always a clear path for those kids to a career. So in places like Houston, where the local economy depends on it, we're really seeing some innovation.
When you mentioned that in some cases, students can have their community college degree paid for, does this mean that career and technical education is not meant to replace college, but just to complement it or supplement it? Or sometimes, is this kind of modern vocational education enough to go and get a job and never have to get an advanced degree?
You know, sometimes it is enough. I went to a high school in Pasadena, which is just outside of Houston, and I spoke with one of the teachers there, and he was saying that he estimated about 90% of his students in his auto classes were going to go straight into working. And some of them would take or will take community college classes at the same time, but they're going to go straight to work after they graduate from high school. But if you're looking at something like healthcare, there really is a push to get these kids into community college and have them earn an associate's degree. So it completely depends on the field.
And do you see that in healthcare because these are more complex jobs that really do require more than just high school education? Is it all sort of field dependent?
It really is, and it also depends on what each industry has in terms of apprentice programs. So a lot of the oil companies, for instance, outside of Houston, feel that they can train some of their workers at the company themselves. They have their own training programs. But in something like healthcare, there's more of a push for these kids to go through a local community college program or even a four-year degree program before they get to that job.
Let's hear a little pair of sound from two students who are weighing in on the kind of vocational education, career technical training they've been doing. First one is from a woman named Haley Webb. She was a culinary student in the career and technical education program at Willamette High School in Oregon. And she talked about how her hands-on instruction is going.
When you have a certain career you want to do, you should look forward to going every day, and I think that's why I like coming to this class. I am very grateful. It definitely helped me decide what I want to do for the rest of my life.
So the idea that learning skills in high school can really help guide you in terms of what career you might want to pursue. Here is another student. This is in New Hampshire, Juanita Rooney. She was a senior at Salem High School's Career and Technical Education Center last year. And as part of her training for a career in forensic science, she took an internship at a local water treatment facility.
My responsibilities are to test water samples, which involves a lot of wet chemistry and microbiology. Taking this class has helped me do hands-on experiments and testing, and it will help me decide if I want to go into forensic science.
Emily Dury, again, a far cry from just cosmetology of the old days. How widespread is this? How often do we see high schools offering these kind of skills-based classes?
It's hard to get an exact count, but we definitely are seeing a trend. And I spoke with people across the country who describe it as a pendulum, and how these classes were popular, or vocational education was kind of a popular option in the 70s and 80s. And then there was a swing away from that toward college for everybody in the 90s and in 2000s. And now we're seeing a bit more of a swing back toward career and technical education as they've rebranded it. We're seeing it in places like Texas, again, because there's a push from local industry. Michigan, Louisiana, those states have both passed laws that aim to make it a little easier for kids to take something like welding or manufacturing instead of maybe an advanced a math course. But we're not necessarily seeing it across the country. There is a push, though, in Congress, especially in the House, to reauthorize the law that governs career and technical education, and to give states and cities more of a say over how they use federal funds, basically, so that they can respond to the local economy.
You mentioned the philosophy of recent decades that college should be for everybody. Is part of this shift to a more modern kind of vocational education people being willing to say maybe college actually isn't for everybody, maybe it's a disservice to some people, and we need to find ways to find them thriving, satisfying careers that don't involve a bachelor's degree?
Yes, you are seeing that in places. And this high school in Pasadena that I mentioned earlier, the teacher that I spoke with said, we really need to get away from this idea that college is for everyone. There are kids who aren't going to make it to college, and we need to give them good options. But then you are seeing concerns in some places. I spoke with a professor at Rice University who is concerned that these classes are disproportionately filled by students of color and lower income students whose families may not be able to afford college. And she's worried about that gap and wants everybody to have college as an option if that's what they want to do.
Yes, and that gap I want to talk about later this hour, the drawbacks, if there are, of these kind of programs. But let's first hear from a caller, and this is Mark from Nashville, Tennessee. Mark, welcome to On Point.
Hello. I just wanted to chime in. You know, I'm a fan of alternative education methods and come from decades of generations of educators, rather. I'm not an educator myself. However, there is a subset to this whole idea of vo-tech education that really plays out in a not-so-friendly way for kids or young people who fall into glamour positions. The whole idea of, you know, going to a vo-tech school for a job in the music industry and working in audio engineering, hypothetically. That's the world that I'm in here in the Nashville area, and we see it all the time. You invest a lot of money to ultimately land with a piece of paper that honestly doesn't garner or gain anything. However, in a truly technical application where there are decent paying wages, jobs that can support it, heck, you can certainly make this work for anybody. But
Mark,
anyway,
you don't think these programs are actually giving kids the skills they need to be qualified for jobs right out of high school?
Specifically to the somebody made a comment about audio engineering during one of your pieces, mm-hmm. and I'm in regards to the audio engineering world, the people who are going to get the jobs are the ones who have the internships that actually go and get hands-on experience, And you can go and do that outside of a VOTEC training in quote-unquote audio engineering. Again, this is just, I'm speaking to one vertical component, and it's probably applicable in other glamour positions like, I don't know, filmmaking or, you know, such and such. I think there's great, great, great return on your investment when you pursue something that's uniquely technical, you know, petrochemical, healthcare, et cetera, et cetera.
Mark, thank you for that. And Emily, that actually, Mark's reference to your investment raises an important question, which is, are these free programs? Are these offered by public schools or charter schools, or are students having to pay for some of these voc ed programs?
No, these are free. And in a lot of cases, the schools connect them with internships. But I do think he makes a good point that, let's take cosmetology, for instance. There are a lot of especially young women enrolled in something like cosmetology, and they're not all going to get those jobs. That's not necessarily an in-demand field. And schools don't necessarily want to tell students what course they should pursue. They want kids to be invested in what they're learning and interested. But potentially they should do more to encourage kids to go for something like healthcare or petrochemical, where there are jobs.
And I will talk more about this later in the show, but I understand that also the best of these programs work with industry to decide where are jobs needed and where will jobs be emerging, so that if one industry begins to fade, they can pivot quickly and begin to prepare students for new ones. So is that a key part, working hand in hand with industry?
That's crucial. That's an absolutely crucial piece of the whole puzzle. And it happens in places like Houston. It happens to a lesser degree in places like Denver and Reno.
This is On Point. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about vocational education, known today as career and tech ed, and how it's preparing high school students for in-demand careers. Join this conversation. Let us know if you took trade classes that led to a career, what kind of classes you took and what kind of work you ended up with. Would you let your children pursue this path? We want to know what you see as advantages and disadvantages of vocational education and what reputation you think it has. We're talking with Emily Durie. She's a senior associate editor at The Atlantic, where she covers education. And joining us now from Hartford, Connecticut, is Sean Dougherty. He's an assistant professor in education policy and leadership at the University of Connecticut. Sean is also a former high school math teacher and assistant principal. And he's the author of a Fordham Institute study released in April titled Career and Technical Education in High School. Does it improve student outcomes? You can find a link to our study at our website, onpoint.org. Sean Dougherty, welcome to On Point.
Thanks very much.
And to give us a feel of what kind of things kids are learning in modern day vocational education, let's go to Texas and hear a piece of sound from a high school senior, Jocelyn Flores, because her high school has partnered with the Pasadena, Texas Municipal Courts to give students experience as court personnel in a teen court. And Jocelyn helps decide the punishment for peers who had to plead guilty to certain misdemeanors.
Right now I'm trying the law enforcement and do teen court. See if it's like interesting for me, if it's like something that it's my calling. It's nerve-wracking because it's all in your hands, a person, what a person did, and then what you're going to give them.
And one more student, this is from Napa High School in California. The student's name is Clarissa Rodriguez. She is doing a public safety careers pathway program. And in May, she said that she was very excited to complete a training in what's known as Community Emergency Response Team.
I wanted to learn the emergency skills needed to help others during actual emergency situations. I enjoy public safety and plan to pursue a career in this field after high school. My dream job is to become an FBI agent or FBI criminal investigator.
Sean Dougherty, you've done so much work and research in this area. Give us a few examples of other fields that students might study in modern day vocational education that might surprise people who just think of it in terms of sort of auto body and shop.
Sure. Great question. So information technology is a big program that's been kind of expanding over the last decade or more. And so students who right out of high school could go and be an IT technician for any number of communications companies get that sort of training in high school. And in some instances, there's specific partnerships set up. So, for instance, in New York City and now across New York State, there's a series of P-Tech schools that have a specific linkage with IBM to create pathways into information technology specifically. Health services, given the growing demand for jobs, varied jobs in health services within regional and the national economy, has another area that's been exploding really. You know, students can go from certified nurses assistants in the high school setting to transition into LPN, licensed practicing nurse programs in community colleges, and then on to get RNs and beyond. So there are some nice pathways, especially vertically integrated pathways within both of those fields. And then I believe Emily mentioned earlier advanced manufacturing. This does have some more regional variation, but the idea of customized manufacturing, on-demand manufacturing, has also really expanded, and high school CTE settings are a place where students are getting that.
Could these kind of skills trainings lead to jobs that don't require any type of college degree?
In some instances, yes. So there are certainly entry-level jobs in each of the fields that I just mentioned that students could step into and do step into right out of high school. There are also pathways into community colleges, two-year colleges, and four-year colleges, as well as certification programs that you know can stem from that. But in order to and certainly in different labor markets, the entry-level requirements may differ. But certainly they're designed with the idea that students could step into an entry-level job right out of high school.
Let's hear from some listeners who've done vocational ed training. Hector is calling from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Hector, tell us about your experience with vocational ed.
Hi, Sasha. I graduated in 1998 as a technical, mechanical, and architectural draftsman. And that trade allowed me to go into the mechanical engineering and designing surgery equipment, paid for my university. I became a structural civil engineer, still using my trade daily. I'm the manager of a branch 11 years later in the six-figure echelon of my salary. All of my colleagues that graduated from Tampa Bay Tech are doing very well off. We never had menial $6 an hour job in 98. We were all $12-$15 above the minimum standards at the time, and it was all because of the trade.
So you're a true believer and had a very good experience. I'm really glad to hear that. Let's hear from another caller. This is Camille from Houghton, or is it Houghton, Michigan? Camille, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Sasha. It's Houghton.
Houghton. So tell us about your experience with Voc Ed.
I just graduated from high school. I took a health careers class my senior year, and it totally changed my life.
In what way? Give you direction?
Well, we had the choice between health careers and nurse's aide, and I knew I didn't want to be a nurse, although I have great respect for them. I wanted to be bigger, and it gave me the opportunity to get over 50 clinical hours in a hospital setting and meet with doctors, and I was able to put it on my college application, and I am now a rising pre-med student.
So you will be going to college. It wasn't just that this class gave you the skills you need to skip any kind of college education.
No, but it gave me the experience, like the inside look on what it's going to be like when I finally get there, and that was so important to me.
Camille, thanks for that. Emily Dury of The Atlantic, I want to ask you about the reputation issue of vocational education, because in my reading about this, I came across a reference to vocational education having a damaged brand and the idea that it used to be a pathway to nowhere, just sending kids to low-paying jobs, or it was for low-performing students who were not considered suited for college. Do you feel like that was a real stigma, and is this area still trying to overcome that?
I think that it completely depends on where you are. In some place like Houston, this Pasadena High School, it's a brand new building. The community passed a bond measure, $200 million plus, to sort of get that up and running. And the community has really rallied around it as an option. But if you look at some place like Denver, the school there, their CE school there is older. It doesn't necessarily have the same facilities. I spoke with some people in the local community who said, no, I don't want my kid to go there. So I think it completely depends on your location.
Let's bring in another guest to weigh in on that. And this is from Boulder, Colorado, Kevin Wellner, who's joining us by Skype. He is director of the National Education Policy Center and a professor of Educational Foundations Policy and Practice at the University of Colorado Boulder. Kevin is also co-editor of Closing the Opportunity Gap, What America Must Do to Give Every Child an Even Chance. Kevin Wellner, welcome to On Point.
Yes, hi, Sasha, and hello, Emily and Sean.
And Kevin, I'd like to get your perspective on whether part of the challenge for modern vocational education, which, as we've been talking about, is now called career and technical education, is a reputational one. Did it end up having a a stigma in a sense of the place where you put kids who can't hack it in college? And is that an unfair reputation today that nevertheless it needs to overcome?
Well, I think that vocational education approaches have had some and still have some potential to be beneficial, and that's what we've been focusing on thus far. But they also have the potential to be harmful, and as you said, vocational education has a long history of becoming dead-end tracks for students from low-income families and for students of color. So CTE, I mean, I think that I could say a lot of positive things, and I think you've covered a lot of those, but and CTE can be one element of a challenging, supported, engaging curriculum.
So you're saying maybe you do skills training alongside traditional book learning. You go to your English class, then you go to your welding class. Is that the right blend?
Right. So the trick is to avoid the tracking and segregation by taking the best of CTE ideas and the best college preparatory approaches. So there's this, I think Houston has some linked learning schools that Emily has covered. California is the primary place where we see those. And linked learning is a really nice example of how to do this, how to draw on the best of each approach. But it's really important to understand that the goal of connecting academics with real-world context to promote student interest and engagement can be accomplished in a lot of ways that don't carry the CTE baggage. And that baggage in the past really has been filled with racism and classism and failure. So we have to be really careful how we design and implement CTE policies.
Kevin, you referenced linked learning. That's a term in this field. And we actually have a piece of sound about that very point. And again, linked learning tries to make education more relevant to high schoolers by linking academics with real-world technical skills. So in Sacramento, California, there's a School of Engineering and Sciences, and it incorporates this idea of linked learning into classrooms. This is a piece of sound from a 12th grade engineering teacher there, Ken Davis, and he was talking about a recent project they did that revolved around a clean emissions bill.
The kids are taking that bill, and they are looking in engineering, they're looking at electronic transportation. Government class, they're analyzing the bill. They're going to do some debates in there. In their drama class, they're actually making a video. And the culminating event is for them to create this electronic vehicle, which is a go-kart.
Kevin, do you view that as a sort of great example of what linked learning can be?
Yeah, I mean, I think we'd have to dig a little bit deeper to find out how college prep this is. I mean, I was startled earlier to hear the sort of declaration that some kids are simply not college material. And I think we cannot flippantly and in a sort of pretend colorblind, disingenuous way say, well, we need these vocational tracks or CTE schools because not everyone is college material or has an interest in college.
But do you think that's true? Do you think that every kid, if given the right support, should be able to try to go to college? Or do you think that, or do you disagree that some kids simply can't?
Well, not everyone will go to college or should go to college, but do we really want a society where I, as a researcher, can reliably predict when a child is born which child will and won't? You know, we need a society where every child has an equal opportunity to choose whether to go to college, where every child is given opportunities to learn, you know, that will allow for that choice. And historically, vocational education tracks have foreclosed those opportunities.
Well, it's interesting. It sounds like this idea of blending book learning, the English class, with the skills like welding would be a great way to equip you with some marketable skills so that if you choose not to go to college or can't make it through college, at least you do have some skills from your high school years that you can fall back on. Is that part of the idea?
I think that is part of the idea, but this is the trap that we could fall into and that we've fallen into again and again and again over a century of time. So this isn't an indictment of all vocational programs, but it's a glaring red flag that we can't ignore when we design and implement these programs. And the only way to embrace this policy without that sort of concern, I think, is just to ignore that century of history.
Emily Dury of The Atlantic, can you weigh in a bit on the baggage, as Kevin Wilner put it, that CETE sometimes has from the days when minority students in particular were funneled toward it? What are the drawbacks or the potential downsides if these programs are not done well?
Right. I think that is a real concern. And I will say that in all of the high schools that I was in, the kids taking these classes were mostly students of color, regardless of whether the surrounding population was as well. And I spoke with, you know, I'd go to other high schools that weren't offering these classes, and I'd speak with, you know, white families, for instance, and many of them who tended to be higher income were saying, you know, it's great for some kids, but I don't want my kid in that. And I do think that is a real concern because, like the caller said, you stand to end up with some pretty segregated schools. And if that happens, you know, kids aren't exposed to different ideas and students from different backgrounds. And yeah, there is a stigma in many places that these are sort of dead-end high schools for some kids.
Sean Dougherty of the University of Connecticut, do you see potential downsides in a career and technical education program not run well or not thinking about trying not to track certain students toward it?
Absolutely. And I saw this in my work as a high school teacher and administrator as well. I was a liaison to our local technical career center. And one of the things that was apparent was depending on the quite honestly, the track of course, academic coursework, you know, math and English in particular, that a student was taking when they entered high school, it did change the set of elective requirements that students, you know, had available to them. And that included CTE. And so if you were not in as college preparatory a sequence of courses, you might be more likely to be recommended into CTE coursework or those electives may have been more available to you. And I think a nice anecdote to illustrate that is that the kind of the other end of the academic spectrum was we had a student who was in a biosciences program at the technical center, wanted to take AP calculus, and the schedule at the high school hadn't been constructed in such a way to facilitate that initially. That was rectified, but it pointed out that there was this sort of, you know, class or ability-based thinking that existed in the way the schedule was constructed. So, and as Kevin mentioned, there's a long history, academic history. You know, social science in the 60s in CTE kind of suggested this was a way out of poverty that had been suggested, you know, seven decades earlier as well. And what resulted in the 70s and 80s was really race and socioeconomic based tracking. So it certainly is important, and the element of choice has to remain at the student level, or else we risk these kind of systematic differences in offerings.
Let's hear from a caller from Charlotte, North Carolina. This is Will. And Will, welcome to On Point.
Thank you. Hi, Tasha. I traveled to many countries, and in a few of the countries that I've traveled to, they have a unique program that in the sixth grade, they test the students across the board. And students that are tracking towards college, and they have their own criteria set up for that, move towards college. And college is paid for completely as long as these students continue to maintain that track and that field. And the other students that are not showing the grade levels that should be achieved to go to college or track towards skills. And, of course, in this country, you'd have to have an exclusion that you could sign out and not do that, or we'd have problems in this country. But in that country, they continue moving them towards skills, and their skills are very advanced. Like physical therapy is not considered something you need a 4 to 6 year college degree in. And it goes much beyond just the mechanics that I hear people speaking of here. And in those courses, though, they also teach marketing, business writing plans, checkbook, you know, many things that lends itself to the skills that they're going to eventually graduate in.
Interesting. Well, thank you for that. And that actually segues us nicely to how other countries do things. Certainly Germany is known for this. We will talk about that after a break. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
This On Point podcast and following message are brought to you by Goldman Sachs. For answers to the world's most pressing economic questions, from the evolution of consumer preferences to the reasons for price swings in the oil market, tune in to Exchanges at Goldman Sachs, the firm's podcast. Each episode features in-depth discussions with some of the firm's leading experts on the markets, evolving industries, and the global economy. Subscribe to Exchanges at Goldman Sachs on iTunes, Stitcher, or SoundCloud, or listen at gs.com/podcast.
This is On Point. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer in for Tom Ashbrook, and we're talking about vocational education, although that's not what it's called anymore. It is now career and technical education, and its proponents say it's an important option these days, given the skyrocketing cost of college and the burden of college debt. Join this conversation. Let us know if you see companies in your community working with high schools to help students train for in-demand careers. Do you think skills training could replace college for many students? Or do you think that vocational education should always be paired with traditional book learning? Joining us from Washington is Emily Durie, a senior associate editor at The Atlantic, where she covers education, and Sean Dougherty, an assistant professor in education policy and leadership at the University of Connecticut. Also, Kevin Wellner, director of the National Education Policy Center. And just before the break, we were hearing from a caller talking about what he's seen in other countries. Let's hear from a caller who has some experience with voc ed in other countries. And this is Lee from Shelburne, Vermont. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Sasha.
So tell us about your voc ed experience outside the United States.
I grew up in South Africa, and in high school, I got to choose my electives for my last four years of high school. And I got to take what we would call here is home ec, but we call it in South Africa hotel keeping and catering. And it's very comparable to a culinary education in the United States, which I was very lucky to find out when I moved here, because I realized that out of high school, I already had a lot of the service training and the kitchen training, the culinary education that I needed in order to enter the hospitality field.
And did you feel that it left you or enabled you to get a job with an actual living wage, a satisfying job?
Absolutely, absolutely. I worked in New York City for about 10 years, and just through having mentors who worked within the restaurant industry and who were dedicated to teaching, the aspects of service and fine dining and hospitality and service and things like that, I find myself quite educated, especially coming out to mostly rural Vermont. I have a bit of a leg up over most you would call maybe entry-level professionals at this point.
Lee, thank you very much for that. And Kevin, Sean, and Emily, Lee raises an interesting point because in many industrialized countries, students begin to prepare for a career while they're still in high school. That is certainly not always the case in the United States. Could one of you, I'll let you decide which one is strongest on this, give us a sense of what happens in other countries that might be a good model for us? Kevin, Sean, Emily, any
sure,
of you have
This is Kevin.
Is this Kevin? Great.
I mean, I would say that the best model is probably not Germany, but rather Finland. And I think that following the lead of Finland, we would have students, we prepare students with a strong and equitable academic education without any tracking through the age of 16, and then encourage them to make meaningful career and life choices.
And so for you, Finland is a very good model in terms of that.
Yeah, I mean, one of the problems with Germany is as the previous caller mentioned, the tracking starts at a much earlier age. And so there isn't that same sort of resiliency that allows students to mature and grow into a different set of interests than they might have when they're 11, 12 years old.
The tracking might become a trap in a sense.
Right. So that's always the problem with tracking. I mean, the metaphor of tracking is once you're on the track, it's hard to get off of it.
Sean Dougherty, I want to put a question to Sean Dougherty based on an online comment that came in. This is from Nigel O'Shea. And he writes, are we showing kids how to be passionate problem solvers pursuing a career that they love or just cogs in the machine? And that is an important point. Is there a risk that students who opt for career and technical education, in the old days known as vocational education, won't have the critical thinking skills that college is intended to teach us?
So I'd say that risk exists in both settings. I mean, I guess the question is, does the risk exist at a higher level or to a greater degree if a student pursues career and technical education? But I'd say if you have bad high school CTE or bad high school college preparatory work, you're liable to end up in the same position. I think that this speaks to Kevin's earlier point about keeping standards high, but increasingly, especially jobs that fit more with careers that emerge for the 21st century economy, increasingly require critical thinking skills, reading at higher levels, technical manuals, things, because so much is now computer-based, a higher level of critical thinking in general. So it's certainly something to be guarded against, but I don't know that I expect on average it's kind of a greater danger in a CTE program.
But you make a good point, Sean, which is that college certainly does not guarantee success in life or in work, or that we will come out with critical thinking skills. So it's not simply that you have those skills if you come out. Let's hear from some more callers. This is Tom from Wellington, Florida. Tom, welcome to On Point.
Hi. Nice to be here.
Good to have you. Tell us about your vocational education experience, if you have one.
All right. Well, I started off in high school. And both my parents are college graduates, and one day I told them that I wanted to go to aviation school in Miami, which was a mechanic school, a tracking for an airframe and power plant mechanic for aircraft. And so I did that, and I got a job during the summer working at the airport, and wasn't really that thrilled about it. And when I got back to my senior year of vocational school, I decided to go into air conditioning, and I did that for a while, but I had worked for a friend of mine's dad who was a veterinarian, and once I was exposed to the trades and stuff, I decided I'm going to go ahead and do that instead. So now I've been a veterinarian for 35 years, but my comment is that I learned so much on that. I was able to have my own little business while I was in college, paid for college, and I'm kind of wondering why you're looking for the kids that aren't maybe as smart as the ones that can do the footwork in college. I'd have to tell you that you're probably better off letting people know all the options. And the smarter ones, you know, we need more of them in the trades rather than the ones that maybe aren't as intelligent. So I just wondered what your comment was on that.
Oh, that's interesting. And that's an interesting point, Tom, because in some ways, although you went the vocational ed route, you chose not to follow those paths. And by becoming a veterinarian, obviously you needed a great deal of college education, but you still found value in it. Before our guest comment, let's hear from another caller, which is Deb from Dover, Delaware. Deb, welcome to On Point.
Oh, hi.
Tell us about your experience with voc ed or career and education training, if you have one.
Well, both my children went to a vocational high school, and here in Delaware, it's a little different. The philosophy is the power of knowledge for work and college. And
could you repeat that? The philosophy is what?
The power of knowledge for work and college.
The power of knowledge for work and college. Okay, so basically two-track. Think two ways, work and academics.
Yes. Yes, and they in their freshman year, they make the rotation to all the shops, as they were, and then they narrow it down to three, and they do those three for 6 weeks, and then they pick one for their next 3 years. And they also track with academics during this time.
And your kids went through this program?
Yes, they did, and they are both in college now. My younger daughter actually left the vocational school with a dental assistant job, which is radiation certification, and she is working as a dental assistant like 20 to 30 hours a week helping support herself while she goes to college full time.
Well, this is an interesting point. We've heard this from other callers. It's quite interesting that maybe voc ed may not land you on the career path you will have for life, but it certainly gives you skills that enable you to earn good money and good jobs during college. So it can have a way to really work your way through school, which is much harder to do today. That's quite interesting. Let's go to one more caller before we go back to our guests. This is Joe from Stanton, Virginia. Joe, welcome to On Point.
Hi, how are you?
Good, good. Tell us about your family's experience with vocational education or career and technical education.
Okay, my daughter went to vocational school to take auto body. Everybody thought she was crazy when she wanted to do it. She took it all through high school. She did a co-op where she worked after school at an auto body shop. When she graduated, they gave her a full-time job. Then she did go to a one-year art school because she's a great artist to take, you know, airbrush painting. And now, before she's 30 years old, she owns two sign companies and her own home before she was 30 years old.
Without ever having to go to college?
Correct.
Why did everyone think she was crazy when she wanted to go this path?
Well, she's a little girl. She's 4'11", she's a beautiful girl, and everybody just couldn't understand why she wanted to take Autobot.
And as her parent, how did you feel?
I just said, you know, whatever. I know she was always a great artist, and she loved cars, so it just worked perfectly.
That's good to hear. That was Joe from Stanton, Virginia. Sean Dougherty, tell us a little more about the idea that for these programs to work really well, they need to work very closely with industry to make sure that the skills the kids are learning, there actually are jobs waiting for them. And if industries contract, as is so often today, that the programs can be nimble enough to change their offerings so that kids will be able to be trained for the new type of emerging job.
I think that's right. And that's one of the caveats that folks have raised in as part of the critiques of CTE is this, you know, are we training for students for jobs that just won't be there in 10 years? So maybe they'll have a job now, but not a decade from now. You know, of course, this is true probably for all of us, depending on the training we're doing in high school and the beginning of college. But, you know, there are some models that exist for strong partnerships between industry and schools. So the state of Massachusetts has a Chapter 74 designation that CTE programs can get, where basically it shows that they satisfy another set of requirements. And that, you know, affords them additional money from the state, but it does require that they have technical advisory groups. And most states have this requirement that industry has to have an advisory capacity, but the strength of that capacity is what's highly variable. But in Massachusetts, some of these regional technical high schools, they open and close programs in response to employer input. And so they set the number of seats, let's say, in a culinary program or an IT program based on the employers in the area who sit on their technical advisory board, letting them know what's the labor market demand, what's the equipment being used, what's the state of the art in terms of training, so that, one, they know that there are students they could hire from these programs or hire while they go to college, and two, so that as equipment needs, training needs, and specific job, you know, employment needs change, they can adapt. And as I mentioned, there are great examples of where this is done well and probably even more examples of where it's not yet being done in the way that it could be.
You know, career and technical education is on the radar of national politics. Both of the presidential vice presidential candidates this year have weighed in. They're supporters of it. Let's hear from Republican vice presidential candidate and governor of Indiana, Mike Pence. Here he is praising the value of career and technical education a couple years ago when he was visiting Anthus Career Center in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Programs in career and technical education are right for our kids because it allows young people to explore their passion in career and technical areas before they graduate from high school, so that they have better understand where they might want to go in college or where they might want to start in their careers in good-paying jobs that are available in this community.
Again, that was Indiana Governor Mike Pence, now Republican vice presidential candidate. And let's hear from his Democratic counterpart, Tim Kaine, Virginia Senator, vice presidential candidate for the Democrats. This is sound from last July with Tim Kaine urging the Senate to make career and technical education a core part of academic curriculum in schools.
CTE is a core academic subject. I grew up working in my dad's ironworking and welding shop. I ran a school that taught kids to be welders and carpenters in Honduras many years ago. And what I learned is that high quality technical education is an important part of the educational spectrum. We downgraded it for a number of years, but there's a renaissance now.
Emily Dury of The Atlantic, we're hearing that at the national political level, people have support for this. But you mentioned earlier a bill that the House was looking at, which was going to help fund this kind of work. Can you tell us where government funding for these programs stands?
Right. It's something that the House is looking at, and they've got a pretty comprehensive bill, and it has bipartisan support, and it actually could see a vote in the fall in the House, and it might actually pass. In the Senate, there are a couple of different bills, and they're a little more disjointed, but this is an area where we are seeing bipartisan support for career and technical education. Education Secretary John King has come out and said that he'd like to see some sort of reauthorization of Perkins, which is the law that governs this area. And the big push is to kind of move some support or more of a say to the states and cities about how they use federal funds so that they have the flexibility to respond to the local economy.
Emily, I think it was you earlier who mentioned Houston, and Houston had opened the country's first energy-focused high school. This is in response to the oil industry. I also was reading about a nonprofit based in New York City that tries to close achievement gaps. It's called Urban Assembly. And there's an urban assembly school for emergency management in Lower Manhattan. That's for kids who want to become police officers or rescue workers. There's an urban assembly New York Harbor School on Governor's Island that teaches kids how to be commercial divers. There's even a UA urban assembly maker academy in Lower Manhattan that teaches kids, for example, how to use 3D printers to build prosthetic hands. Kevin, Sean, Emily, any other specific examples you can offer of places around the country where they're so specific like this? Anything come to mind we haven't mentioned?
Reno, this is Emily, I can jump in. Reno is pushing to expand career and technical ed in the STEM area. Tesla recently selected Reno as a place to build a new factory, and they went into the schools and said, you know, we really want to do some hiring locally. And so there's been this push in Reno to expand science, engineering, math, and to incorporate those into the career and technical classes. But one of the issues that they're running into is in terms of teacher development. Not enough teachers have the skills to teach these courses. And that's something I also ran into in Houston, was that if you've got somebody qualified to teach these courses, they'd rather be out working on an oil rig or something like that, where they're going to get paid more than they will teaching high school.
Oh, that's interesting. So we may have a situation where demand outstrips supply when it comes to who's going to teach these kids. That's quite interesting. Emily Durie is a senior associate editor of The Atlantic, where she covers education. Emily, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you.
Also with us was Sean Dougherty, an assistant professor in education policy and leadership at the University of Connecticut, and Kevin Wellner, director of the National Education Policy Center, professor of educational foundations policy and practice at the University of Colorado Boulder. Sean and Kevin, thanks very much to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And listeners, continue this conversation online. We want to know what you think, what your experience with vocational education, now known as career and technical education, has been. You can continue at onpointradio.org. You can make an online comment. You can also follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.